I hope you're ready. It's that time. Climb aboard, all aboard, for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
I got a bad feeling about this.
I can't take it anymore.
I am losing my mind.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
I know that, dude.
On Highway 99 in Junction City. Online at GuaranteeRV.com.
Alex is sitting there saying, what the heck are they talking about?
I would have Mariota out at 3 in the morning drunk, pawning his Heisman Trophy to get into an illegal poker house.
And now, a guy with lots of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
No, I mean, like, lots of issues.
Shut up and get on with the program. Dude is a snot.
And broadcasting them, searching for answer.
Who is this?
It's Steve Tannen.
Have another donut, you fat pig. And folks, with that, I officially call to arms the start of the first full weekend of March 2020. Whoop, whoop, whoop. We got tournaments happening. We've got basketball. We've got round ball. We've got action on the hardwood. It's all starting to say the same thing. It's March. It's awesome. In town tomorrow night, Oregon men and Stanford. Chance to ice the one seed and the Pac-12 championship. The Oregon women today, who a little less intense at the start of the game. Those are the words of the head coach, Mr. Kelly Graves, then went into beast mode and turned a 3-point first quarter deficit into a 16-point halftime lead en route to a 79-59 victory against a rather game Utah team. And so 6 o'clock tomorrow night on the Pac-12 Network, Arizona at Oregon. Later, top of the hour, USC-UCLA, and late game tonight from the Mandalay Bay Event Center, Oregon State and Stanford. As for the Duck men last night, I don't think you could have asked for very much more. They just, I don't know, by the middle of the first quarter, they were in control. And then by halftime, they're up 26. I mean, they really didn't take the foot off the pedal that much. I mean, there was a point, I think Stanford got it down to about 15, but bing, bang, boom, it was back to 20, and it was all over but the shouting. The performances, many to doff a cap to. Hey, you put five players in double figures. That's just a path to victory. Assist-to-turnover ratio was sweet. 18 to 8, any coach is going to take that all the time. Five blocks, they shot the ball well, it's deadly from three-point land. And something that's been an issue over the course of the season, but occasionally takes a turn for the better. They didn't need it, but they were so aggressive, they got to the line 20 times, shot 80%, made 16. Pritchard, five splashes. Addison Patterson working hard, getting to the bucket. Ends up with 13 points, 6 of 7 from the charity stripe. What was the number I saw on the stat sheet that I wanted to share? Oh, right. The game was tied for 19 seconds. Oregon led the other 39 minutes and 41 seconds. Well, it was a 90-56 final. So this year, I heard Joey Mack on the way home, and I know from the UCLA game, the University of Oregon basketball team put their biggest hurt ever on the Bruins and their biggest hurt ever on Cal this year. So the Bruins have turned it around since then. Cal looks like they got a game tomorrow night and one more in the tournament. Obviously, there's no way to tell who's going to play where. The tournament doesn't start until noon on Wednesday. Oregon will not be playing on Wednesday. They're either going to play noon Thursday or 6 o'clock on Thursday. I will not say where our greed is taking us here. You know why? Because I think I just kind of said it. But he said it anyway! The performance again last night. Well, first of all, I find myself, and I don't know why, they're really good players. They're going to be around for a while. But I think, Nick, it was you and I driving to the game, and we're like, that's one of the freshmen, right? Is that the transfer guy? And I don't know what the issue is for a team we followed really closely all season long. And, you know, Dante is a freshman. Duarte and Justin, those are the transfers. Lawson and Walker, those are the freshmen.
The problem is I...
And Patterson.
My ability to actually, like, put a name and a number with a grade in school or a year in school, it's like one of those little, like, clicky slides where you try and click all three. Like, oh, yeah, just remember, yes, all three of these. I can remember a guy's year and a name, but maybe not his number. But I work really hard to remember a number and a name, and then I forget who the freshman is. And then I've got names and years right, but then I forget numbers, and it's just... My mind is just a not fun place to live in. It's a little complicated sometimes. And I threw in just a whole bunch of doubt into a conversation in the car on the way over, just being like, Walker's a freshman? He's a five-star guy?
I don't know what the problem is with me.
I don't know why you forgot either. That's the other thing.
No, that was really weird. I had a mental block. And the bottom line is, the first thing I did was when we got to the stadium, I pulled the roster. It was like, all right, now I think I've got it. So there you go. Defensively, in that first half, the Ducks, you're not going to do more. They were challenging shots. They were busting their butts, getting back on defense, using their speed and some of those guys who have length to get into passing lanes. And it was more than just sometimes the turnover number tells a story, and 10 isn't an extraordinary amount. But I don't know what way, if there's a way, if it's a kept statistic, but for those of you who follow the Oregon men's basketball program closely, am I wrong by saying it seems like they force a lot of shot clock violations, or the other team ends up getting bad shots, you know, tick, 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 tick. They had two last night. There was one time a few weeks back where Nick and I actually got to the point where at three, we're like, we're going to keep a running tally of how many times they force the opponent to have the referee pat the top of his head, revealing a shot clock violation. But, you know, there's no way around the fact that, well, first of all, you know it's what Altman and his guys preach. Ball movement, unselfish, give up a good shot for a great shot, and defense, defense, defense. I said, eventually, I think Altman is going to deflect a pass. I think he's going to get out there and just knock a pass away, and the ref's going to be like, you can't do that.
The Ducks got a 10-second violation. Well, I guess Cal got the 10-second violation. Oregon forced it to Cal to struggle getting over the backcourt, and Altman was just going crazy, moving his arms around on the sideline, like coaching his guys up, like, my press is working to a key, this is great. And he looked over at the clock and saw it said 20, and he wanted the half court to be called, and he was about half a foot behind the ref. And I thought he was going to swallow him whole if he didn't call it. Like, if it was a half second later,
there might have been an incident.
The ref would have been swallowed alive. It wouldn't have been very good.
Yeah, the impressive level of their performance could be found in the text I just got from Brad. So he took a screenshot of the scoreboard when it was 43-18 with just under 3 minutes to go in the half. Oregon was shooting 76% from the field, 100% from three-point land, and 100% from the free throw line. If the ball was in an Oregon player's hand and it went up, it went in. It was unbelievable. It was demolition top to bottom. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Matt. Matt, good afternoon. How's it going?
Oh, can't complain. It's raining again.
No way. And Eugene?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Well, I thought spring had sprung. I was going to try and hit 9 holes after work today.
No, unless you're going to do the indoor putt-putt, I wouldn't advise it.
Well, a girl can dream, you know?
So what's up?
Oh, same old. My Cats lost to your Ducks by 1 point both times this season in overtime.
Yeah, I know.
Fantastic. No, they were both very good games. But, no, I wanted to ask you, what's going on with Pharrell? Because where's he been?
Oh, Scott Pharrell?
Yeah, you know, on the bench.
They altered, you know, you do realize we have nothing to do with that.
Oh, I know. You have more information than I do.
No, he, CBS Sports Radio in New York, you know, that's a corporate decision. They don't check with their affiliates. They just are like, here's what's on. But they rearranged their nighttime schedule.
Well, what happened was they reshuffled the programming and kind of changed things around. And then a couple weeks after that, Scott announced that he was going to be, I think he moved to Vegas and he joined another network, a kind of a minor one. And he's doing a lot of shows that are all a lot of gambling centric, basically. So Scott Pharrell decided to leave CBS on his own after the shuffle, and so now in the evenings after Duck Insider, they currently have a fill-in host as they're waiting to find a full-time guy to do that late night to almost overnight shift.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, because like right before that, I remember a show that his father-in-law died or his father died. He seemed really broken up about it, as you know anybody would be. But dude, I love the show. You guys kick ass, and once I move back to Tucson, I'm going to miss the show. You talk about the Ducks a bit too much, you know, for my taste, but...
Really? A Eugene radio show talking about the Ducks? Shocking.
I know, it's crazy.
And so you're moving back to Tucson? You can't take the weather anymore?
Yeah, back to Tucson.
Well, you know you can catch us on different platforms, so you could still listen even though you're out of market.
Honestly, I will.
Hey, appreciate the compliment, and best of luck. All right, take it easy. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. You know, it's actually kind of funny because obviously this time of year you're not going to talk about the Ducks. Both basketball teams are on the brink of winning the conference. The women are on their way to the Final Four. The guys got a shot to make a run. Sometimes I get from the diehard Duck fans that we don't talk enough about the Ducks. And I'm like, there's not Duck in our title, and especially as a transplant, I have a lot of interest. And in a college town, as much as people love Oregon, it's a mini melting pot, so there are a lot of other people who have their loyalties to NBA, MLB, NFL, other conferences, other teams within this conference. So I don't like to be limited in the scope of the topics we are not only willing to, but capable of discussing.
We didn't even talk about spring practice. Kayvon Thibodeau's up to 250 pounds. He's going to be unstoppable. That dude was already a monster, and he just got bigger. Man.
Now, once they get into it next week, and we start getting the reports from Thorby and Rob and those guys, I'll bring up a little bit more because I do want, because eventually you'll get to a point where they'll put out their version of what the depth looked like. And to me, that's like an assignment. Because all the guys who were here, early admission, redshirt last year, you know how I always say, until they show up on a depth chart and I'm going to have to discuss them actually playing in the games, sorry, they're just not my responsibility.
183 days.
Till North Dakota State?
Yeah. Are you ready? Do you feel prepared at all in any
half
way?
Half a year. Exactly, since it's a leap year.
Right around the corner, though. Also, like you think, oh, wow, we got 6 months. We got a full baseball season to look ahead to, an NBA, a Stanley Cup finals.
You're one of those,
we got a March Madness,
you're annoying
because
you like football too
much.
And
boom, right around the corner, you've just got Oregon football is right there.
Nah. Still haven't even got to the Masters. I haven't played golf this year. The tournament hasn't even started. I don't even think about football.
You're going to blink, and you're going to be calling a guy in North Dakota talking about the Bison and how they're...
Oh, I know what's going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
I ain't there yet.
The summer is going to fly by. You're going to be saying, wow, I wish it was March 6th again, and I could just really kind of slow things down. And you won't be able to. Time doesn't stop for anyone, Steve.
It goes faster for some, though. There's no question about that. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. So one of the stories I wanted to get to. So Aaron Rodgers today was quoted. I read the story on ESPN, and it was Rob Domofsky, I think his name was. Says a vocal opponent of the collective bargaining agreement. Rodgers isn't sure whether it will pass the full NFL player vote that's underway, because he's not even sure how many of the union members care enough to consider all the provisions. So he was on ESPN Radio in Wisconsin with Wild and Tosh, and he says he sent multiple electronic messages to his teammates about the talking points and barely got a response. And he said it's disheartening. He says people are so distracted, he can't believe guys don't care about this. And there, he says, yeah, you want to know what your salary's going to be, and not taking the look of, are we taking care of former players? What kind of additional risks are we taking on? What are we getting in return? And one of the problems is, I'm not just going to pin this on athletes. Young people, be it celebrities who come into a bunch of money, especially if they're from humble beginnings, have a history of not being the best with money. And if you ever saw a special, I think it was on ESPN, called Broke, and guys like Bernie Kosar, who made all that money but got taken advantage of, or in the case of others, there were interviews that players are not only competitive on the playing field, but about, you know, style. And if one guy got a really nice new ride, somebody wanted to play one-upsmanship, but in a case like this, I mean, there are hundreds of millions of dollars on the line for fellow union members, and they're not taking the time to learn the details of this. Man, if I were somebody who was really adamant about this not being the right move as we speak for the NFL Players Association, I would imagine that could be a little frustrating. And by the way, you got to give Rodgers credit. He's fine. I mean, he's been making tens and twenties of millions of dollars forever and will continue to do so. So he's got his. I've always felt he was the type of guy who had a bigger view, you know, a little more wiser, a little more wisdom. But anyway, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's take a phone call, bring in Kurt. Kurt, good afternoon. How's it going?
It's going well, Steve. I'm enjoying the rain. Boy, we need it.
Okay.
Hey, couple of things. I'm looking forward to the Lakers hosting the Milwaukee Bucks tonight. I think that is the preview of the NBA Finals this year.
Uh-huh.
To go out on a limb.
Well, that's for sure the favorites, no question about it.
Yes, and, you know, I really haven't watched Milwaukee this year, but I plan to do so in the playoffs, and I think if I'm not mistaken, they still have a chance to match the record of the Golden State Warriors from a few years back.
Yeah, their recent loss, I mean, ESPN rolled a number that they had a 49% chance of achieving 70 wins, but with the loss this week, it dropped down to, I think, 28%. So it's still there. And, you know, obviously they sit at 53-9, so, you know, do the math. They got to stay under 12 losses over their last 20 games. So if
right,
they finish.
Not likely, but should be interesting, and they certainly have a great team. Switching over to hockey, I'm sure you noticed the accomplishment yesterday of a rare dominating performance by a NHL hockey player.
Five goals.
A guy being lit. He lit the lamp five times, including the game winner in overtime.
Yeah, I'll tell you the truth. I didn't follow up on the story as far as the last time somebody scored five goals in a game. I mean, you know, that's Gretzky-like territory. I mean, who does that?
Nobody. That's about the most dominating sports performance I've seen in a long time. I'll have to catch the highlights of that. It kind of reminds me of Well, a team accomplishment. I used to follow the Wisconsin Badgers hockey team quite a bit when I was a kid, and they once beat a team 20-0.
Really?
I don't think I'll ever see that again.
Do you date back to the Badger Bob days?
Oh, sure. The 1970s, when they were winning NCAA championships left and right and supplying a lot of Olympic hockey members. I once saw Chris Chelios hit a slap shot goal from just in front of his goalie's crease.
That's good. That's you know, you're going old school there.
Oh yeah, talk about a rifle shot. And oh yeah, I love college hockey. Hardly ever watch it anymore, but it's fun.
All right, hey, I appreciate the call. Good input, and enjoy your weekend.
You as well.
All right, take it easy.
There have been since the year 2000. There have just been 4 5-goal games in the NHL. Mika Zibanejad last night. Patrick Laine did it in 2018.
Really? Was that recent?
Yeah.
Okay.
November 2018, right around Thanksgiving, he had 4 5-goals. Johan Franzen did it in 2011 for the Red Wings. And Marian,
the Mule! Why was he called the Mule? He carried the load.
And Marian Gaborik did it in December of 2007. Other than that, there's been a decent, well, 26 in total, just 4 of them since the year 2000.
Yeah, but with Zibanejad, it's like my favorite thing about a guy like that, it's like he's having a year now that he's never had.
Right.
I mean, he was with Ottawa, came to the Rangers, got injured, but all of a sudden with them he's had his – set his own personal record 2 years ago for goals in a season. Then he broke that, and now he's going to be a 40-goal scorer. So, but still, the Swede was not the type of guy that you would figure, if, you know, if you went around the league and you were like, all right, odds on, who's going to score 5 goals? It probably would have been a while till you got to him.
It's really surprising, probably because the NHL rules have changed so much regarding overtime, but he got his 5th goal in overtime for the game winner. So
by
I
the
just
way, 8 shots.
Highly efficient. I thought there would have been more guys who of the 5-goal club that needed overtime to get a 5th goal. But it turns out guys that, of just games that ended in regulation, there's 23 of them. So Zibanejad and 2 other guys needed overtime to get the 5th goal. Other than that, you've got Patrick Laine, Johan, and Gaborik, the 3 guys I already mentioned. They all did it in regulation. So I don't know, maybe a bunch of guys just kind of scoring a bunch of goals and getting a 5th with an empty netter or something like that. Just check your defense at the door.
Man, when you look at the all-time list of guys who scored 5 goals, you know, you're talking occasionally you did get the true snipers. You know, Gretzky did it a couple times. Lemieux, Joe Nieuwendyk, who I think has the record for rookie goals in a season. Peter Bondra was a sniper during his day with the Caps. Sergei Fedorov, obviously. Dave Andrechuk, who I think is a 600 career goal guy. Daryl Sittler, the Roadrunner, Yvonne Cornwallé. Boom Boom Geoffrion, who was one of the originals in a light beer from Miller commercial in the 1970s. And the original Rocket, Maurice Richard, who the pocket rocket, we were talking about him earlier, Henri Richard, actually passed away. He's like the Bill Russell of Canada, because some might say he's not the greatest player ever, but he won 11 Stanley Cups with Les Habitants, passed away at age 84, 15 years younger than his older brother, Maurice the Rocket Richard. Henri was the pocket rocket. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll have a Coors Light update. And I want to play that interview that we had, something we don't usually do, but it was very centered on the impact of Sabrina Ionescu and ticket sales and percentage of sales involving the rise in women's basketball. I found it interesting and hope you will too. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more sports talk. 95.3 The Score.
Sports Talk with Steve Tannen is brought to you by Garrity RV Supercenters. Name one of America's top five RV dealers. They don't just sell fun, they guarantee it. See over 700 options for every budget at Garrity.com.
Scott Anderson, Chris, over at Rocket. Tied in Siakam, picked up by Wiggins. Curry, good! He counts it, and he's fouled! 7-point game, here comes Steph, knifing, driving, reverse, good! 21 for Curry!
Steph is back. They lost, but Curry looked good. Raps KO them at the Chase Center as we welcome you back to Sports Talk on 95.3 The Score. As far as what lies ahead on the weekend, by the way, another 8 o'clock start tomorrow night. Boo, hiss. That's all I have to say on the matter. Boo and hiss. What to do, what to do. By the time we start our pregame at 7 o'clock, we'll be halfway through the Oregon women's game, which is at 6 o'clock against Arizona. So is it going to be, I mean, if it's a tight game, I'm not going to leave here. I mean, if it's, you know, the thing with the women's games, they don't take 2 hours. They take about an hour and 50.
That's what the radio is for. So if you're driving around town and you're also in this predicament, you can turn on KUGN News Talk 590 AM and listen to Terry Johns.
I'm not going
to
not
on the
watch.
Oregon Sports Network from Learfield IMG College.
I will not be going away from the TV. It's 2020.
Says the man who's been working in professional radio for 25 years.
There's exceptions to everything. I've given people permission not to listen to the show before. It's been like, what was it, the Blazers in the playoffs that started earlier, a 5 o'clock. So I'm like, I totally understand if you want to go away now, some of our regulars, and just tune in for a 5 o'clock start, whether it's been for World Series and stuff like that. It's totally understandable. It's unreasonable to think that anybody is going to be totally loyal to you for doing a radio show when you know that their first loyalty is to their team. So there you go. I'm prepared. Are you prepared? What are you prepared to do? Maybe we can do the traditional phone it in, set up my interview to end the show and get there. And I bet you there'll be a lot of people down in the interview room watching the Ducks on TV. Absolutely.
They've got those TVs on press row, too. And actually, when I was at it was when the men played UCLA and the women were playing Oregon State at the same time, they were actually showing it up on Duck Vision. There are plenty of ways for you to watch this game while watching another game from press
Trust
row,
me.
Steve.
The Weasel in Steve will be coming out in full force. You make note of that, Missy. All right. Anyway, earlier today, I was making the rounds on social media, and I saw an article in the Wall Street Journal called "Attendance at Women's College Basketball Games is Surging. The hottest ticket in college basketball have been historically for games in which the athletes were men. Thanks to a transcendent star and a hotly competitive 2020 season, the women's game is starting to change things. Her name, well, you'll get the gist of it. Here was my conversation with the author, 95.3, The Score. Always love to talk a little something different. Our next guest has penned a terrific piece for the Wall Street Journal about attendance at women's basketball games, which obviously a topic near and dear here. You can follow her on Twitter. Use the handle at LaneHiggins17. Spell it L-A-I-N-E. Higgins the traditional way, and I think you could figure out 17. Lane, much appreciate the time. How are you?
I am doing great. Thanks so much for having me.
So as a first-time guest, I've got to ask a little personal background. Where do you hail from? Where did you attend college? And how long have you had the gig with the Journal?
All right. So I grew up in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and lived there for most of my life until college. I went to UPenn in Philly and still love that city, but now I'm in New York, and I've been with the Journal for just shy of 3 years. I'm doing sports for about a year and a half of that.
All right. So now that brings about a very critical question. As an East Coaster and somebody who lived about 15 miles north and west of Philly, I need to know, Lane, how often did you visit and shop at the King of Prussia Mall?
You know, I had never been there because I didn't have a car in college, so I drove by it one time on a reporting assignment when I was able to rent a car and working for the Inquirer, but never actually been in.
All right. I used to literally live in the apartment across the street, so kind of near and dear to me. But,
oh, yes, I'm sure.
Anyway, the article you wrote speaks to the rise in attendance, but it's not a trickling up issue as you wrote. So mm-hmm. some schools are talking about, I guess, a borderline explosion where the women are generating a much bigger chunk of ticket sales than ever before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, it's something that I think has taken root over the course of a couple years, but at a lot of these programs that have risen, you know, your Notre Dame's, your South Carolina's, Mississippi State's, they've never had terrible women's teams, but their women's teams are comparatively more dominant, and that in the sport, it's not just UConn versus everybody else anymore. And I think that fans are taking note because women's basketball is a great product, and, you know, the tickets might originally have been easier to come by, but now the demand for them is just as high, if not higher, than for men's games. And I think that students are kind of waking up to the fact that there are more than just one gender of great athletes on campus.
Talking with Lane Higgins of the Wall Street Journal, you know, the last home game here before the coach now who's overseeing all this success, Kelly Graves, there were 733 people in the stands.
Yeah, pretty sparse.
This past weekend, with back-to-back sellouts, they had almost 25,000 people for two games. So mm-hmm. in your research, dating back to the arrival of a certain star here, what kind of numbers did you unearth regarding attendance?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty remarkable. In Sabrina's first season in Eugene, I believe the women's team accounted for about 19% of total ticket sales. And that's if you adjust for the number of games played, because in some years the women might have 14 games, sometimes 16, the men might have more. And then now in Sabrina's senior year, they're almost 60% of ticket sales. So it's just a total explosion. I mean, it's literally three times as many people are coming to games on average. And I think, you know, that's partially speaks to the talent of Sabrina and that she's this once in a generation player. But it also, I think, makes you realize that, you know, there's other great players on this team because the team is more than just Sabrina.
You know, as a professional who follows the game, you're obviously a fan. The fact remains that, you know, it doesn't come with a lot of national hoopla. Like, when she decided to come here, it wasn't front page news. Do you remember when you kind of became aware of her? Because it seemed like not a lot of people knew about her to, oh my God, look at her.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I actually was thinking about this the other day. It was the fall of 2018. I was reading Sports Illustrated's College Hoops preview, and there was this tiny little infographic that said something about how many triple-doubles Sabrina had at that point. And I think she was well under where she is now. I think she had maybe 8 or 9.
Right.
Still not quite the record. And I remember writing down something in my notebook saying, you know, oh, pay attention to her. She's probably going to be a great player. And that's kind of where I left it. And then just watching her explode the last few years has been insane. And now you watch any sort of college hoops broadcast, male or female, and they usually at some point will mention Sabrina, especially in the Pac-12. And, you know, you're watching, the other day I was watching an Arizona-UCLA basketball game, and for about 5 minutes, the announcers were just talking about Sabrina getting the 2K, 1K, 1K record. And I think that's telling, because if ESPN is doing it on a broadcast that's not women's sports, that's a pretty big sign that it's monumental.
Oh, no, it's a game changer. You know, one general question. I'm 59 years old, and I got to admit I'm as guilty as anyone as far as taking too long to get wired into the women's game. Don't you find it kind of ironic that most fans seem to connect more with LeBron James, who play a game we couldn't fantasize about. Well, like 99.9% of the population, if we played, if you played, if your cousin played, we played the women's game on the ground. And it's amazing how it's taken so long for people to connect to what is actually everybody's game.
Right, and you know, I think there is something to be said for the entertainment value of posterizing the opponent and, you know, these huge dunks, but, you know, that's not the only reason why people watch basketball. You're watching it because you like to watch the plays unfold and, you know, the smarts of a player and how they drive to the hoop, and you're right, and that's more, the way the women play is more reflective of how perhaps the everyman plays, but I don't think that's necessarily why we're finally waking up to this, because you're seeing it in other sports too. I mean, the women's soccer team that won the World Cup this summer, the way they play soccer is totally not the way an everyman can do it, because they're so phenomenal. And I think that people are just finally realizing that, you know, you can respect these athletes and not always have to siphon them off and say, oh, but they're good for a woman. Like, those soccer players and a lot of the basketball players out there that are currently in the college game are just unbelievable athletes, period. And I think that's taken a really long time for people to kind of come around to. And just because you have the segregated ways of competing, just because that's how it's always been for so long, and so much coverage has been, I mean, the media is totally responsible for this, and that we write about the men's sports far more than the women. And I think, you know, journalists, people that are looking to sponsor athletes and marketers are kind of waking up to the fact that the men's space is pretty crowded and the women's space is wide open, and there's so much opportunity to really showcase the amazing talent of these athletes. And I think people are realizing that it doesn't really matter if they're a woman or a man that's being showcased. They're doing something incredible. They're doing something incredible.
No, greatness is greatness. And I proudly support my number 5 Kelly O'Hara jersey all the time.
Right.
A couple final thoughts for Lane Higgins of the Wall Street Journal. You noted the impact on the secondary market and kind of put the spotlight here on the University of Oregon. So what did you discover about what is happening financially, not only with the Ducks, but in other parts of the country as well?
Yeah, so there's several women's teams that their tickets on the secondary market, according to the data that the Seeds provided us, they're actually almost double the price of the men. So at Oregon, getting into a women's game on average will cost $49 if you buy a ticket that's not directly from the University of Oregon, whereas for the men, it's $29. And that's the case at UConn. It's higher. It's higher at Mississippi State. It's higher at Notre Dame. It's higher at South Carolina. And I think that that's kind of indicative of demand. And if you look at the trend in those prices on the secondary market, and also the share of women's tickets that were being sold on the secondary market over the last 4 years, like at Oregon, for instance, I think 4 years ago in Sabrina's freshman year, 1% of all ticket sales for basketball on the secondary market at Oregon were for the women's team. And this year it's like 42%. And I think that just shows that people use secondary ticket marketplaces quite often when they're getting sports tickets. And I think that the fact that they're gravitating towards those to seek out women's tickets and not just picking them up after their class or their lecture, walking by at the, you know, ticket office at will call right outside the stadium is telling, because that's some more planning and effort that's going into it, and it makes it seem like the game itself is more of a destination.
And lastly, you spoke with, her name is Nancy L-O-U-G-H Loff. Is that close enough?
Yes.
She studies gender equity in sports at UNLV. And mm-hmm. She pointed out something I thought was fascinating, be it Serena Williams or now Michaela Schifrin, the best skier on earth. Regardless mm-hmm. of their remarkable achievements, it hasn't always translated nationally. Why does she think with UNESCO the attention is there and more widespread?
Well, she said something really interesting in that because Sabrina did something in the 2,000 points, 1,000 assists, 1,000 rebounds that literally no other college player has done, you can't ignore that. And if you're ESPN, if you're a major sports outlet that's writing about, you know, the best athletes in the game, you can't go about your day without mentioning that this player has done something no one else has done before. And I think for a long time in women's sports, the standard to really break through and get some attention was to be in conversation for the greatest of all time. And I think, you know, Sabrina obviously is in that conversation. And I think that it's kind of a rising tide raises all boats situation, and that obviously she deserves all of the attention she's getting, but by proxy, all of the other women's players that she's playing against, that she's playing with, are also getting a little bit more attention. And I think that's just kind of a cycle that trends upward, and that people realize, wow, it's really electric to watch, you know, Sabrina play against UConn, and wow, it's awesome to watch her play against Oregon State and so many other teams, that they're realizing that, you know, maybe it's worth investing their time and money in women's sports.
This has been awesome, folks. She's Lane Higgins. The piece in the Wall Street Journal is fantastic. Really hits home for Duck fans who have obviously witnessed this brilliance firsthand on Twitter. Her handle is at LaneHiggins17. Lane, hey, thanks so much for finding time. Travel safely and literally give my regards to Broadway, and we appreciate you coming on.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was a great time.
All right. Hope we can talk again down the road. Enjoy your weekend.
Twittering, tweeting, you name it.
On Sports Talk with Steve Tannen.
LOL, laugh out loud, OMG, oh my God, WTF, why the face?
Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
Hi, everybody.
Yo, Doc Nick.
Hello, host Steve. Nick Rogers here at the Coors Light Frostburg Sports Desk for the Coors Light Refreshing Tweet of the Day. Coors Light Mountain Cold Refreshment, that's made to chill. Oh boy, what do we got on Twitter today? Some very good news, obviously, from my sports updates earlier, but nearly a year after his gruesome leg injury, Jusuf Nurkić is coming back for your Zers. It'll be good to get him some minutes under his belt again and get back out there, see what the Zers are going to be like. Also great to hear that just his long journey of
almost a year, huh?
Yeah, almost a year since to the day. So good to see that Nurk is back. At Dan Woken with a report from the NCAA in the coronavirus COVID-19 advisory panel from the NCAA. The NCAA is saying that all events will go on as planned and scheduled, so there won't be any games as of now played in front of empty arenas with no fans. I was talking to you about it, and I was talking to my friend Jacob, who was on Press Row with me last night. I kind of...
Best photo bomb of the year for
oh,
us.
Oh, yeah, it was
like,
very good in the
bomb.
Halftime hangout. He did the walk down the stairs behind this thing. I'm on it. I'm really surprised that more people haven't been doing anything to us. Like, everybody's just so kind of like they've got their stuff to do. They're doing their work. We're doing our stuff. And
you're really not going to interfere with the two idiots talking.
Right. We've had paper thrown at us. I lost my phone fell down and hit a poor woman one day. It's all very bad. But anyways, I was talking that I think it would be really cool to cover an event as a media, because I think the media members would be allowed in. They just don't want all the other people. I don't know. So it's just a very interesting idea of just maybe covering a game with no fans.
No fans.
Which would be interesting.
Which actually, during the tail end of the Westhead era, you could have kind of done that. That's cold.
That's mean. On the coronavirus chain, that's my connection to our tweet of the day, from Stephen King. That's right. Stephen King gets our tweet of the day today. He's very... very in on the tweeter. I guess the big thing, for some reason, one person bought a lot of toilet paper at Costco, and now every Costco in America all over the planet, they don't have toilet paper there. The next thing going off the shelves are the Lysol wipes and your Purell hand sanitizers. And so Stephen King posts a meme of the clown from It as he's going to lure little Bobby down the drain with the caption, "I got hand sanitizer down here."
Oh, God, that's funny. Stephen King is clever. One of my wife's favorites, by the way.
Stephen King coming at it with the tweet of the day. Very on topic. Good for him. Good for you, Stephen. Congratulations. Go to at 953 The Score. That's our Twitter handle. You can also find us on Instagram under the same name, Facebook as well. We post all of all 3 hours of the podcast on the Twitter and on the Facebook. I'm on Twitter at Rick Nodgers. Steve is on Twitter at SportsTalk953. Don't be a jerk.
JDI.
Just do it.
So Mike Freeman of the NFL posts something on Twitter. So if it's 11, I'll tell you what, at our airport, at Eugene Airport, Maitland Suite, at 8:30 on a Friday, Would you, if you had a flight, would you get there a little early normally, thinking, hey, it's, you know, rush hour. It, you know, we're not a huge city, but we're a city. You'd want to get there. So you'd think if you were going to a busy airport like Logan in Boston, somebody took a picture. Logan Airport this morning at 8:30, there's nobody in line at the security, and we know why. And that is amazing.
Somebody farted and it smelled and they all left.
Wow. Okay. Stinky Bostonians. By the way,
prove me wrong.
Tiger's not playing this week, and I was doing some reading. I mean, this is Arnie's tourney when he was obviously alive, and Woods has always used this as part of his Masters tune-up, and it's a back problem. Something I brought up on a million occasions, you know, when he had the knee injury that cost him after he won the U.S. Open in 08. That's one thing. If you listen to Tiger and the doctors, it wasn't chronic. The surgery happened, the healing, that's fine. But what he's had done to his neck and back with his game, the force of his swing, and the fact he's now 44, you don't know from year to year, month to month, week to week, if he's going to play. A good gauge will be next week because he wants to play in the Tournament Players Championship at Sawgrass. By the way, 5 weeks from yesterday is the Masters. Hey, have yourselves a great weekend, everybody. And enjoy, be safe, catch you later. Thanks for listening to Crunch Time and Sports Talk on 95.3 The Score.